Right. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here till 4 o'clock. It's a Thursday morning. Or it will be, I should say. After midnight, Dan Feinberg is going to join us, Hollywood reporter, TV critic, and we'll talk to him about a bunch of TV. We're going to talk about abandoned places that no longer exist, and some crazy celebrity endorsements as well. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. My guest right now is Max Grinnell, who is the urbanologist. He's an urbanologist, a geographer, historian, professor, and raised in Seattle and Madison, Wisconsin. He was educated at the University of Chicago. He's an expert on urban design, planning, public art, and the creative economy and the history of cities. And we're going to talk about the history of Chicago, Labor Day, and the labor movement. Chicago and Illinois are a big part of the labor movement, and Labor Day is Monday. So we thought we would talk about the history of labor and labor movement in the city and the state as well. Max, hello.
Nick, how are you? Thanks for having me back.
Absolutely. All right. Good to talk to you. How did you become an urbanologist? Where did that give us the background?
Well, it's an interesting story. I was looking through one of these, you know, old school, you know, you and I both remember these old school dictionaries, and it's actually at a branch of the Chicago Public Library. It's just probably almost 20 years ago. And I was slipping through, literally just looking through pages, looking at stuff I had studied both at the University of Chicago, and I was like, you know, how do I put those things together? And I literally came next to the word urbanology, urbanologist. And I was like, someone who studies and explores the urban condition. And I was like, well, that's me. As you said in the intro, public art, urban design, community development. You know, cities are complicated, endlessly fascinating cities, places, excuse me. And so I thought, boy, that's the perfect way to do it. And practical background, too. Someone had already literally squatted on urbanologist.com. So it had to be that I'm the, you know, the only one, the urbanologist.
Right.
So it all happened.
Yeah. And as an urbanologist, what exactly, how does that work? What do you do?
What do I do? Yeah. Sometimes people come into my talks and they say, or they used to come to my talks, for they're all on Zoom. And they said, what is exactly you do? I've taught urban studies, both at the University of Chicago, where I went to school, and in Boston, both at Boston University and Massachusetts College of Art. So I'm in the trenches teaching intro to cities, cities and culture, and an attempt to get young adults and anyone else interested, both not just in a career and working around cities, but just kind of understand all the bits and pieces. You know, I'll have students even, we'll even look at an old school classic like Richard Scarry's Busy, Busy Town and say, what does this tell us about how young people look at cities? So we, you know, how, if you were to make your ideal block or sidewalk Richard Scarry style, what would you put on it?
Yeah.
So it's kind of a gateway to, you know, I like to convert the unconverted, right? You know, like, who are those people? Like, hey, I'm walking around, say, a Hegwisch. I'm walking around a Pullman, which I know we'll talk about tonight. Like, who are the people there? You know, was it Mr. Rogers to tell us who are the people in your neighborhood?
Yeah.
That's it. You know, that's kind of the first principles of what I do.
What cities have you found most fascinating? I mean, we're obviously going to talk about Chicago tonight, but what cities have you found the most fascinating to look back at?
That's a good question. I mean, I'm always, you know, especially with all the stuff we're going through right now with the pandemic and everything like that. I love big cities, Chicago, Seattle, where I was born. I spent some time in Morocco a number of years ago in Casablanca. But I also think the conversation in recent years has also turned to those medium-sized cities. You know, I remember when I moved to Chicago to go to school and being fascinated with Northwest Indiana, which listeners will know as the region. You know, even the kind of those mid-sized cities. And boy, they're having a renaissance now too. You know, your Hammonds, your Whitings. So I don't want to describe them as unknown gems, because goodness, if you're in Northwest Indiana, people, right, you've heard of Hammond, you've heard of Whiting.
Yeah.
But you know, you think about these places that I don't think that they're due for one reason or another. Providence, Rhode Island, another one of those cities. I think it's kind of people in Providence will tell you it's great, but some people might, you know, be less familiar with these places. And I think in smaller or medium-sized cities, you can kind of get to, you know, we know how this goes sometimes in Chicago. You kind of have a little more access, right? Maybe you know the city manager. You know, it's easier to work your way around. I mean, they're still dealing with the personalities and how navigating all that. But, you know, I think this is one of those conversations, too. And certainly my students now, for a number of reasons, you know, price being part of it. Oh, L.A., San Francisco, even Denver now. These are places where they would have once flocked to. And now some of them looking for smaller, medium-sized cities. So, which I always say, boy, you got so many to pick from in the upper Midwest. Great place to start.
Yeah. So your website is theurbanologist.com then?
That's me.
Yeah. All right. There you go.
Yeah, thanks. And if folks are interested, yeah, please take a look. Thanks, Nick.
Yeah, absolutely. So Labor Day is coming up, and you know, this state and this city has a rich history involving the labor movement and labor. What's the real history behind Labor Day?
So the history behind it is that, you know, it can be traced in no small part to events surrounding the Haymarket, what used to be called the Haymarket Riot, Haymarket Uprising. We now generally use more objective language to describe it as the Haymarket Affair. And for listeners who may be less familiar with that, this is part of the struggle for an eight-hour day, which is something that had been talked about by the Knights of Labor. And they were kind of a, I don't want to describe them as a single-issue group, but they were really focused on working an eight-hour day. One thing I always tell my students, we're talking about work or labor in cities, is most people, again, broad generalization, in the American experience, you just worked more or less, not all the time, but pretty much as long as you could, 12, 14, 15-hour day. And for a lot of people, until kind of labor reforms of the late 19th and early 20th century, and then really ramping up around as a response to the Great Depression, you know, maybe you had some time after church and your religious service on Sunday. That was kind of your time for rest. So people really, that was one of those things that they really wanted to try to work out or work with, is to just think about, like, how do we create an eight-hour day? So you have, in the spring of 1886, kind of a lead-up to what would become known as the Haymarket Affair. And there were, you know, a lot of things being slung by both sides. There was conversation about, you know, German Marxism, anarchists, and part of this was a part of it was tied to a strike at the McCormick Reaper plant, which, of course, was in Chicago.
Right.
And things really started to kind of heat up and intensify on the night of May 4th, actually on Des Plaines Street. So, you know, well, I guess we now call the West Loop. And there was a crowd gathered.
And this was in 1886.
Yeah, 1886.
Yeah.
And Mayor Carter Harrison was there, and he said, oh, they told police don't disturb the meeting. And, of course, you know, this kind of no one really knew what happened exactly at the time, but someone hurled a bomb at the police. One officer died right away. Police pulled out their guns, firing all over the place. When it was over, you had 60 officers injured, and 8 of them died. And this obviously caused a lot of unrest because business leaders, lots of people in the city, were very anxious about this labor movement, right? They had been used to kind of having the upper hand. Mayor Harrison banned meetings. He banned processions. Police made picketing very difficult. And so this is kind of start of this broad movement. Now, there had been strikes before 1887, the National Railroad strike, but this was really that transformative moment, Nick, where really things started to happen, where people moved very quickly. And after this time period, you know, they put some of the so-called anarchists on trial. The next year, 1887, four of those defendants were hanged in Cook County Jail. One committed suicide. Hundreds of thousands of people turned out for the funeral procession for these five dead men. An intense period among many intense periods in Chicago's history.
Yeah. Now hold on 1 second, okay? We're going to take a quick break, and we want to come back and talk more about this and the aftermath of the Haymarket Affair.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah, Max Grinnell is with us. He's the urbanologist, and we're talking about the history of labor and the labor movement and Labor Day in Chicago. It's an important city as part of it, and Labor Day is coming up this Monday. We got more coming up on 720 WGN. Right. Hey, it's Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above downtown Chicago. We're here till 4 a.m. Coming up on a Thursday morning, Dan Feinberg is going to join us after midnight to talk TV, as he does every couple of weeks. Right now, we're talking with Max Grinnell. He's the urbanologist. You can check out theurbanologist.com. And we're talking about the history of Chicago, Labor Day, and the labor movement. Labor Day is coming up on Monday, and this state and this city, Chicago in particular, has a very rich history when it comes to the labor movement. And we're talking about that history right now with Max Grinnell. Okay, Max, continue. We were talking about what was happening right after the Haymarket riot took place, and continue where you were.
Yeah, so after the riot, there was a trial of some of these so-called anarchists at the time, and after this tremendously contested trial, there were legal appeals, and eventually the next year, in November of 1887, four of the defendants were hanged in the Cook County Jail. One committed suicide. Lots of people turned out for this funeral procession, which would be kind of a familiar thing among other trials in the labor movement. A few years later, actually in 1892, Governor Altgeld, he granted the remaining defendants a pardon. And of course, he was criticized by members of the business community as well, too. So you had a couple things that happened after that. There had been an interest in creating a Labor Day before then. And certainly what the International Workers of the World seized upon at the time was to celebrate May 1st as May Day, as a kind of international workers' holiday encompassing all workers. So that was part of that story. We also think about how do we celebrate Labor Day more formally. And actually, interesting enough, the same year that those defendants were hanged in Cook County Jail, interesting enough, Oregon was actually the first state to make Labor Day an official public holiday. So that was part of that wrinkle. Wow. It's been a federal holiday since 1894. So it definitely has this long history. So to say that Chicago has a key role in thinking about, all these events to lead up to it, I think is really crucial, because certainly there was nothing without, there was no precedent before these events of the Haymarket Affair. Worldwide attention, hundreds of thousands of column inches in newspapers in dozens of languages, both in Chicago, the German press, English-speaking press, other languages, and around the world. And of course, as I always like to tell my students, you think about, there's no radio, there's no TV. I mean, those daily papers were how people found out about these things. And pamphlets and things of this nature. So this is a seminal moment in thinking about, what's next for the laboring class, which, hundreds of thousands of people, right? You think about everything from the stockyards to the steel mills to food processing throughout the city. I mean, all these kind of wrinkles and different strands in the labor movement, just like we have today, whether it's SEIU or Teamsters or textile workers. But really, a lot of this can be traced back to the Haymarket Affair. And if folks are probably familiar with, if you go to the exact site where the incident took place, you can find an amazing statue, which kind of tells the story. And actually, I think it was dedicated in 2003, 2004 by Mayor Daley. It was done by Mary Brogger, who's a Chicago artist. And it's an amazing sculpture. It's the speaker's wagon. I think it's, 12, 15 feet tall. And, you know, finally, I think workers getting their due in 2004 of the people of this affair. And it's really, you know, folks have the opportunity. It's a wonderful sculpture.
It really is. Yeah, it's beautiful. It is really beautiful. I've seen it several times. And it's great. And it really does, capture what was, what happened at that. It's really powerful to be there because that's exactly where it happened.
Yeah. You think of those kind of those moments in history. You know, we're so lucky in the city to have both not just the public art, but the murals that kind of capture these different moments. I always think, too, there's a couple interesting ones that deal with the history of social workers and also other kind of labor movements right there under the tracks on 57th Street in Hyde Park, the Metro tracks. Mm-hmm. And actually, they've just kind of redone or retouched up some of those murals as well, too. And I'm sure listeners can think of examples in their own communities, formal memorials, sculptures, even a plaque or two.
Yeah. In general, we'll get back to some historic Labor Day things in a second here. But, in studying Chicago and living here, what are some of your favorite things about this city historically and now?
I think that a city, and I'll just, I'll steal a line from Walt Whitman, it contains multitudes, and there's so many wrinkles that I think that we're always learning more about. There's been, a resurgence of interest, even in building materials, if you think of the type of Chicago brick, right? And of course, you might go by, and if you're kind of initially less curious, you might say, oh my God, who cares about this brick? But it's also the history of technology. It's also the history of the materials behind it and the folks who made it. So like, that's kind of just a small starting point. I remember, even coming, as one travels, as one does, whether it's via metro or car or plane, or I just got off a long train trip. You think about what you can see on foot and through other modes of travel just by going through the city. I mean, one thing that I remember that's fascinating to me, a small thing, when I moved to Chicago, I had never seen in Seattle, it was sort of more genteel. I'd never seen people double park before. And I thought to myself, I was going to get a Polish at Maury's Deli at 55th and Cornell in Hyde Park.
Yeah.
And I saw four cars double parked. Now that's a little moment, Nick, but that's a different thing. I think of those kind of moments. And if you slow down and you take the time, and God, some of us are fortunate to have a little bit more time during these times, just to think about those type of things. I mean, even something, especially we've seen during the pandemic, is the role of just the difficulty of being able to move around a place. If you go out to O'Hare on any day that was before, March 15th or March 20th, a place like O'Hare, essentially 30,000-40,000 employees.
Yeah,
that's like a miniature city right there. I mean, it should.
Yeah,
it really should maybe be its own community area. And everyone wants to talk about the 78. Maybe O'Hare should be the 78.
Yeah.
I think that's one of those things. And those things coming together, just kind of thinking about the whole labor situation is, think about contemporary labor stuff, which is a whole other show. Is all those hundreds of thousands of people who usually had to be in close proximity to do their work, right? A quick moment, just because you've jogged my memory. I remember being fascinated with the stockyards. And it's funny, because when I came to Chicago, I was still a vegetarian from high school.
Yeah.
But I went there, 41st and Route or whatever. And I tried, all I could see, the stockyards gate. And behind it, not the modern equivalent, but everyone knows what it is. You've been over the stockyards the last 40 years. It's light industrial, right?
Yeah.
PepsiCo bottling.
Yeah. Yeah.
And to me, that was fascinating to think about. What were the lives of the men and women who worked there, black, white, Latino, and other groups, but, you know, that labor, you know, and of course, like everyone else, I ate up books like Upton Sinclair's The Jungle.
Sure, sure, yeah.
And, you know, just those are those things. And I think an everyday object like a brick, a piece of brick, an architectural detail, goodness, a hot dog. I mean, those tell us a lot about what Chicago has been like and also might be like in the future. I have to say I eat meat now. I'm not a big veggie dog person. I'm not too keen on those. But yeah. Other than that, I mean, those are some of those gateways to think about, like, who are we? You know, who are we as a city, and who are we as a people?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot to think about. It really is. And that Haymarket affair really did make a huge impact and you know, led to what we're talking about now. Max, hold on, okay?
Yeah, no problem.
All right, Max Grinnell is with us. He is the urbanologist. Check out theurbanologist.com. And we're talking about the history of Chicago, Labor Day, and the labor movement together. We'll talk more with Max coming up right here on 720 WGN. White Snake. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. Coming up on a Thursday morning, Dan Feinberg joins us every 2 weeks on Thursday mornings to talk TV, and he will be with us after midnight. We're going to hear some classic comedy from Johnny Carson. You can watch the Johnny Carson Show every night on Antenna TV, and we like to play back some comedy, whether it be a sketch or an interview or some stand-up, and we'll hear some stand-up from 1987. Jeff Cesario, very funny guy, Jeff Cesario. We're going to talk about abandoned places that no longer exist and some vintage celebrity endorsements and some ridiculous celebrity endorsements as well. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. If you would like to join us, we would love to hear from you. 312-981-7200. I am talking now with The Urbanologist. TheUrbanologist.com is the website. Max Grinnell is my guest, and we're talking about the history of Labor Day and the connection between Illinois and Chicago as well. And Max, you know, so we're moving on from the Haymarket incident. You know, so how much in the world of labor conditions, what was it like before labor rights, for the push for labor rights? What were the labor conditions like in cities?
You know, there were no guarantees in terms of the length of the day frequently, you know, depending on whether it's piecework or not, in terms of safety, in terms of equipment, sometimes in terms of formal training or apprenticeship. Something that changed a lot, too, with things like building trades and formalization of these things as professions.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's telephone maintenance, repair, or, you know, kind of other related trades. So, you know, a very difficult life for most people. You know, 95% of most laborers, and of course that was famously, it says U.S. Census classification is laborer, so, you know, a general tradesperson who would kind of be responsible for a lot of different things. And very, very little leisure time, which, you know, I saw a study a couple of years ago that shows that some insane percentage of Americans never takes their own time, their own guaranteed vacation time, which to me is, that's another American tragedy, Nick.
Yeah.
To take up your own time that so many people worked hard for. And I just, kind of on a personal note, my father, with all this kind of stuff going on with the post office, my dad was a long time National Association of Letter Carriers, which is is another trade that, you know, was eventually formalized and formed a union. So, you know, there are, you know, you would describe it as pretty brutal.
Yeah.
it's kind of an understatement. You know, people, if they had leisure time, as I was saying in an earlier segment, it's sometime after religious services on Sundays. Or, you know, maybe a little, you know, a bit or piece of time here and there throughout the week, but certainly not a lot of leisure time. And working conditions fairly grim. You know, maybe if you're in one of kind of a small slice of trades, right? Financial services, a banker, someone like a tradesperson who repaired musical instruments. You know, and these are really small slices.
Yeah.
You might have, you know, remnants of a guild system or something like that. But for most folks, definitely not the case. You were working.
Yeah.
You were working, and sometimes under, you know, duress. And work, if you worked outside, you're working a lot during the summer.
Yeah.
Sun comes up early, goes down late.
Right, right. So conditions were not good until...
definitely not good. And so these moments kind of where people, these disruptions, Haymarket Affair, the Pullman strike, and others throughout, you know, the city's history. There are certainly dozens of them, but those are two of the very well-known ones.
Well, tell us about the Pullman strike, for people who might not know.
Well, as a former Amtrak employee and as a former railroad union member, I'm what they call a rail fan. Sometimes they refer to us as foamers, but it's not a compliment. It's more of an insult.
Right,
I've always had
right.
a fascination with railroads. So George Pullman, interesting guy, like a lot of other folks in Chicago's mid-19th century history, came from New England, or came from Brockton, New York, actually, so came from the Northeast, engineer. And his first kind of thing, which some people may know about, but I always like to point out, is he was responsible for lifting buildings throughout the loop. So they'd be, you know, they'd be raised, and you would be not kind of, you'd not be in the muck. Tremont House is a good example of this. So that was his first career,
mm-hmm.
You might say, first claim to fame in the city of Chicago, which gets overlooked because he also worked to create the Pullman Company, which, you know, created, which as folks may know, if you know a little bit about railroad history, these were the cars. He wasn't the first person to invent an overnight sleeping car on the train, but these are the cars that became famously popular. You would sleep on them overnight. And famously, he had created some of the cars for President Lincoln's funeral train, the Chicago Alton Railroad. So he was kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
And he built his own company town south of the city limits in the town of Pullman. Not surprisingly, named after himself and the Pullman Palace Car Company. You know, it was a kind of a fat company town, if you will. People could live on the grounds. There was other kind of, you know, kind of this close relation, kind of a paternalistic relationship between George Pullman and his employees. Wages went down during the Depression, starting in the 1890s, 1893, 1894. The workers had appealed for support to a larger union, American Railway Union. Nothing happened. Eventually, what they decided to do is create this strike so you would slow down the sleeping cars. And eventually, it crippled railroad traffic throughout the United States. And people were not happy about this. Federal government eventually intervened. And even though the strike was eventually broken fairly quickly, actually, in the summer of 1894, this was kind of a difficult, you might call it a road to Damascus moment for George Pullman, because after that, it was, you know, kind of a tough time for him. But at the same point, even though the people who were part of the Pullman strike did not obtain what they thought was fair arbitration, it was one of these moments where it was clear that there was something kind of larger in the labor, a growing labor consciousness.
Oh.
And of course, if you think about that, you know, what the equivalent today would be like, you know, which has happened, and they certainly have talked about it in the past, is, you know, pilots going on strike or people working at Boeing going on strike. But of course Boeing isn't making a lot of new planes right now. But this is kind of that similar disruption. I guess you would say in the middle of the 20th century, you know, United Auto Workers going on strike, to say, guess what? No more cars, or we're going to do a slowdown of work. interesting story too. Some of you and your listeners may already know about is that folks are interested in this history. I don't think they're currently open because of the pandemic.
Yeah.
The Pullman site, which is made a National Historic Monument by President Obama, has a dedicated funding stream. So they're working on getting more interpretive centers down there, or kind of more robust programming. I know there's been talk about opening the Hotel Florence again, which like myself and friends used to go for years to Easter brunch over there.
Yeah,
at the Hotel Florence.
Yeah.
So it's a great way to, because you were talking about earlier, but kind of exploring Chicago, exploring cities and getting that firsthand knowledge. It's a great way to learn about labor history. And also just if you're, if you're interested in railroads, which seem to be having, as we say, a moment again amongst many folks, considering now that the CTA makes now makes rail cars again in the city, which is exciting, or has a contract, it's a great place to go and kind of learn some of this history firsthand if folks are interested in checking it out. But another one of these kind of tremendous moments, a real disruption with laborers rising up against, you know, this kind of paternalistic system, and of course, more importantly, reduced wages.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Okay, Max, hang on. Max Grinnell is here, and we're talking about the history of Labor Day and the labor movement here in Illinois, and particularly in Chicago. Labor Day is on Monday, and we have a rich, rich history in that department right here in the city. And we'll talk more with Max right here. He is the urbanologist. Check out theurbanologist.com. Coming up here on 720 WGN. Right. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline studio here until 4 a.m., coming up on a Thursday morning. Dan Feinberg joins us every 2 weeks to talk about TV, and he'll be joining us after midnight to talk TV. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. We would love to hear from you. It's Labor Day on Monday, and so we have an incredible rich history here in both Illinois and in the city of Chicago. Regarding the labor movement and Labor Day in general. Theurbanologist.com is the website. Max Grinnell, who has studied cities and history and all that really cool stuff, is here to reminisce and talk about the labor history in Chicago and beyond. Max, let's talk about the blue-collar sort of mentality that we have in this city. Is that tied to the labor movement, you think?
Yeah. I mean, so absolutely. I think that, you know, you think about whether it's images presented in film, whether it's the Blues Brothers, which are they're obviously musicians. Yeah. They do reference their union card, I will note, at one point in the movie.
Yeah, they do.
It's famously and wonderfully. You know, I think it is. It's a part of the city's identity, and it's, you know, having only been here since the mid-90s, you know, a lot of that has changed fairly quickly. If you think about what constitutes a blue-collar job, right? You know, you go down to the southeast side and you see the USX Steel. You know, they're still reworking on that site, but there's no labor. It's a park.
Among
other things, you think of what constitutes a blue-collar job. I mean, you think of kind of the concentration of stuff over near west side, like Teamsters City, and kind of like where are those people laboring? And you think about the actual numbers, and they're fairly small. You know, you still have, you know, certain industries in the city. You know, I always tell people Chicago's still a big place for food production.
Mm-hmm.
Produces more pork rinds, chicharrones, than any other city in the world.
I didn't know that. I didn't know that. That's amazing.
Yeah, there's still these moments. I mean, you know, you think of other things which have, for a variety of trade agreements, et cetera, you know, goodbye volume candy industry, right? Ferrara, Brock's. What, did they blow up the Brock's factory for one of the Batman movies?
Yeah.
So some of those things, if you consider candy workers blue collar, and definitely work, people working with their hands, but you know, those other jobs, a lot of them have changed, and I think this will be a challenge for labor going forward, labor unions, and we see it already, is, you know, you're not fighting necessarily business or government or lack of intervention, too much intervention, but you know, you're going up against algorithms. I mean, you know, what are you, you're going up against apps. That's the kind of harder, that'd be a whole nother show, but I think it is, you know, people really seek it out. I mean, people want to, you know, they want to experience that kind of blue collar kind of experience in Chicago. I think it's harder. I mean, I know it's harder to find.
Yeah.
You know, you think about kind of whether it's associations with kind of people going to a tavern or whatever, you know, second, third shifters. I mean, there's a lot of change, even the kind of those social spaces. Right now, you're more likely to find, I don't know, expensive, tasty menus on a rooftop. If you can find a rooftop bar that's open.
Yeah.
So I think there's that kind of shift in the change and decline in those professions, or they happen. They're hidden from us. Right. And I always tell people, the place I'm fascinated with, you asked me kind of that question about, there's always something new. I had never walked on foot around Elk Grove Village. Some people listening probably know that Elk Grove Village has one of the world's largest industrial parks. Massive.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So there's work going on out there near O'Hare to support various industry, but you know, we don't really see it. You know, it's not, you know, men or women out there, you know, whether it's, you know, kind of performing manual labor or physical labor, you know, and I think the fabric of the city has changed much as well. You know, think about, you know, over a third of the city is Hispanic or Latino, Latinx. You know, that work has changed a lot too. You know, you might think of blue collar work as being landscapers, gardeners. But yeah, I know people crave it. I mean, people, you know, it's such a big thing, and you know this so well through movies, through songs. And, you know, in some industries, it's still there, you know, food processing and a few other places. But, you know, you'll still encounter people. I've still encountered people who want to see a steel mill or something like that. It's like, well, that's really hard to find in the city limits.
Yeah.
But there's certainly people, you know, there's people working, there's people out there doing all these jobs. I mean, I think of, well, building trades, you know, so those are still really robust places where you might see work like that. But those things that you think of, you know, obviously no more stockyards, steel mills, these kind of, you know, you can sort of see some of the railroad stuff if you go down to South Lumber Street, south of Roosevelt Road.
Yeah.
That might be trespassing, so please don't go into it anymore.
right.
But you certainly, you know, you get a little sense of it. When I was in Union Station 2 days ago, jumping on the Amtrak or coming off one Amtrak, getting the other, you see people doing track work inside the station and things like that. So it's still there. There's just a lot less of it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. It's
a lot
true.
Less of it.
But I mean, I think to the rest of the world, Chicago has a very, very blue collar, you know, representation. You know, I think I think people outside of Chicago think of us as a very blue collar city.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I think there's that. People identify it with, like, they identify with the, you know, the blues, or kind of more, you know, kind of more contemporary artists, whether it's, you know, Kanye or Common, and that kind of, that's really part of the city's fabric. I mean, that's something that I think it's one of these kind of intense traces that's still there, and people want to believe that it's, I mean, it's like the people who go on like the gangland tours, the Capone stuff, like people want to, even if you're driving by the vacant lot next to the, you know, the senior citizen housing on North Clark Street where the St. Valentine's Day massacre occurred, and there's nothing to look at. People want to, yeah, I know the city would prefer that no one come and do that, but people want to believe in that past, and they want that connection. You mentioned the guest here who's going to be talking about abandoned structures and you know, forgotten or lesser known places. Like, yeah. People really want that kind of connection. I mean, we're so lucky in Chicago to have those places where you can connect with that. And I think that's a nice thing about both the Haymarket sculpture and really in a like a robust three-dimensional way, What Remains of Pullman, which is pretty staggering. I remember when I was in school at the University of Chicago when the call came out that some of the buildings had been set on fire, as probably many folks remember. I think it was 99, and a tragedy. But still, there's so much of that site where people can experience that aspect of Chicago labor history and American history.
Yeah,
it's such an amazing site, and Pullman's such a great place for folks who haven't been and folks who haven't been in a while. There's a lot of great stuff going on there, and of course now it's actually kind of hard too, you know, with all the changes and regulations to go out and see any of the stuff. You know, famously, the Tootsie Roll Factory, which is a privately held company out by Midway.
Right.
You can't take tours because of, you know, industrial espionage and OSHA regulations. So it's kind of hard to see some of these things happening. It's all there. I just think sometimes because of the way that work now works, kind of hard to actually see it, Nick, as I think about it.
Yeah, yeah. Max, it's great talking to you, man. Check out theurbanologist.com and have a great Labor Day.
Yeah, thank you so much, Nick.
Okay.
Be well, and same to you.
Okay, buddy, take care. Max Grinnell is the urbanologist, theurbanologist.com, discussing the history of this city and this state. It's rich history in terms of labor movements and in terms of Labor Day. Interesting, really fascinating guy, Max. He's got a ton of historical knowledge, and you should check out his website, theurbanologist.com. Okay, it's Nick DiGilio on WGN.